years gone by, people used to just think of sleep as a period of no activity, like the body wasn't doing anything.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Calder, soon to be joined by Nick and Beck Mihai as we're talking all things sleep today. This will be the last episode where we have someone come in and talk specifically about some of the areas of coach well-being that we've gone into. So sleep is the topic today. Beck Mihai is going to jump in. She is a senior scientist at the Melbourne Children's Sleep Centre. Despite the fact that it's children, obviously knows a whole lot more about sleep than all of us and speaks to some really great areas where people can look to improve their sleep and just some of the habits they get into, but also some of the downsides of ignoring that as well. So trying to get a little bit better range, and you know, we talk about it a little bit in the podcast, that sleep is the one area that every other person spoke about as they were coming into their talk about, you know, where coach wellbeing sits. So sleep is such a vital part. So big thanks to Nick and for Beck for jumping into the podcast, and we'll jump into it now. Great to be joined this week by Beck Mihai on the podcast. It's a very familiar surname. So to start off with, Beck, if you want to give us a little bit about you and tell us why you can choose your friends but not necessarily your family in this situation.
Thanks for having me on. I am Nick's sister-in-law. Yep. So I'm married to the older Mihai boy.
Yep.
So that's how I am linked into basketball in general and, and knowing Nick.
Yeah, unfortunate. But that's all right.
I'm here, by the way, everyone. If anyone's listening, like, this is happening in real time.
I don't know. Just got to make sure that everyone knows the pre-standing relationship. So we are talking sleep today, obviously. So this is very much your wheelhouse and not ours, other than we enjoy sleeping. What work do you do in this space in sleep?
So I'm one of the senior scientists at the Melbourne Children's Sleep Centre. So that's a unit in the Monash Children's Hospital, which perform sleep studies on children who potentially have sleep-disordered breathing, issues with their sleep overnight. We have some specialists in there, some doctors who can treat a whole range of sleeping issues that your child may have. So we usually see children from newborns up to about 18 years of age. And then there's also adult labs out there as well, which also treat adults in that sort of sleep and breathing space.
Yeah, cool. So with young kids, I suppose, we'll start there to begin with and sort of wander off into the various other tangents. What are some of the common like disorders, I suppose, for lack of a better term, that they might have?
Yep. So often infants and, children when they're sleeping, they can obviously have issues initiating sleep. You know, a lot of parents will say that their child can't sleep on their own. They might have troubles falling asleep without a parent next to them. So our doctors will see patients who have sleep associations. So they have difficulties falling asleep on their own, or they wake up during the middle of the night and immediately run to mum and dad's bedroom. So we see our children in that sort of environment. But the biggest thing we see are children who have snoring or maybe have suspected sleep disordered breathing, like obstructive sleep apnea. And so what those children will normally do is if the doctors have a strong suspicion that they've got a breathing issue in sleep, they'll come in for a sleep study and we'll assess their breathing and sleeping patterns overnight and work out if they need to have some treatment for that obstruction.
Yeah, cool.
When you see that obstruction, what are the common, causes? Like what happens to the brain or the body or something like that if they're having those sleep issues?
Yep. So in children, so the most common sort of symptom that parents might see is snoring.
Mm-hmm.
So you might know that your child snores and then that can have daytime and that interferes with the quality of their sleep, and then that may then intrude onto daytime issues with behaviour, concentration, that sort of thing. What was your question, sorry, and again?
No, I think you answered it. Like concentration is a really a big one when you get that cloudy brain during the day.
Yep.
Like I think that, that really does sum it up. Yep.
Well, and as a parent of a newborn, Nick, you can probably attest to how much sleep actually matters.
Oh, it matters. I tell you what, turns out 45 minutes in a night does not help. That doesn't happen anymore. I shouldn't say that actually, because like Sarah might listen to this, but it doesn't happen anymore. But yes, it does definitely, when you don't get good quality sleep and you're waking up and during the night and stuff, I definitely feel a massive difference in how I can concentrate. And sometimes you, I don't know what this is, Beck. Maybe you can help me out. But there's sometimes where at those early stages with Orlando, I was so tired that I would do random things like put the milk in the cupboard. Like my brain's not thinking straight. And then I'd be like, or put the shampoo in the fridge or something. And Sarah's done that. And we're like, what are we doing? What's happening?
Yeah, exactly. You know, most people can push through, you know, one night of bad sleep the next day. But I guess when you're thinking about long-term sort of sleep deprivation, whether that's weeks or months, you know, it can have a lot of long-term and short-term consequences. So like you said, concentration, reaction times are slower when you sleep deprived, learning and memory consolidation can be affected. Your irritability during the day. You might find you're very short with your partners or family members.
Yeah, it's just me in general. Yeah, no, I'm fresh as anything right now. Just
but and it's fascinating because, I mean, this is the last one we've recorded for Coach Wellbeing Month. We were just saying before, like, it's amazing that Alex Parra, a nutritionist, spoke about sleep. Darren McInnes from the fitness and the physical side of things spoke about sleep. Ben McKechnie, who is one of the psychologists we had on, spoke about sleep. Francielle Wilson spoke about sleep. This has got to be – it can't be coincidental. Mm-hmm. Like, is this – like, do we undersell how big a difference sleep can make?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, a lot – years gone by, people used to just think of sleep as a period of no activity, like the body wasn't doing anything. Yeah. Whereas I feel like now they understand that sleep's got such a wide impact on – various things like your mental health, your physical health, a lot of, you know, your body's repair happens during sleep. You know, sleep is a time when a lot of your hormones are regulated, that sort of thing. Nutrition, so poor sleep can lead to you craving salty or sugary foods during the day because of the impacts of leptin and ghrelin overnight and the impact that the poor sleep has on those hormones. So yeah, it's such a, you know, it's
one of the pillars of health. Could you explain, sorry, just go back, the leptin, so that I'm not aware of the leptin and the ghrelin, is that what you said?
Yes, so they're the hormones for, you know, regulating satiety and hunger. And so a poor night's sleep can lower your leptin and also raise your ghrelin.
Right. Okay. Okay, interesting. There's more going on at night than I've probably taken into account in this sort of space. Yeah. But I'm curious, is there – obviously everyone's a little bit different depending on their body, their and just their way of life, I suppose. Is there a recommended amount of sleep per night for people?
So there is. Yep. So sleep across the lifespan, the amount of sleep that you need in a 24-hour period changes. So obviously infants can sleep up to 16 hours across a 24-hour period.
The dream.
Not all in one, you know, consolidated block. But
now that makes more sense. Yeah, now I'm with you. Yeah.
That would be much easier if all of our infants did that. Yeah. And then as you get older, your amount of sleep changes or decreases. And so what happens is usually you consolidate your biggest sleep in the nighttime. And then, you know, everyone who's got children will know that they'll often have little naps during the day. And it's not uncommon for, you know, 3 or 4 year olds to still be needing a nap during the day. Yep. Then once you get to adolescence, they usually need between 9 and 11 hours of sleep. The other thing with adolescence is their circadian rhythm shifts a little bit, and so they actually naturally tend to go to sleep later and sleep longer into the morning, which I guess has an impact when you're thinking about scheduling training sessions on a Sunday morning.
Yep, definitely.
So even without the impact of digital devices, adolescents tend to want to sleep, go to bed later, and also sleep longer in the morning. And then, you know, obviously that has impacts on, you know, whether the school hours should change. Every so often in the media there's some, you know, discussions about whether we should shift the timing of school. And then once you sort of hit your late teens, you sort of – the average amount of sleep or the recommended amount of sleep is anywhere between 7 to 9 hours.
Okay.
That you need overnight. And studies have shown that people that get significantly less amount of sleep or more amount of sleep, they have lots of impacts on their cardiovascular, mental health, and it can also lead to, in the long term, sort of increased mortality rates for those people that are either shorter sleepers or longer sleepers.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Yeah. So when we – is the number of hours the qualifier, I suppose, is to – is it better to have quantity or quality? And obviously you'd like to have both if you were given the option, but which one kind of matters more?
So definitely I think it's better to have, you know, say 6 hours of good quality sleep than say 9 hours of very poor quality sleep where you're constantly waking up, having fragmentation, you know, that sort of thing to your sleep. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And that's interesting because the amount of times, like even now I wake up during the middle of the night and it's usually that 2, 3 a.m. window is where, and oddly enough, a lot of people I talk to, it happens to them as well. Is there any reason for that? Like, I've sort of thrown you on the spot here because this is not a question I threw through to you beforehand, but is there any reason why that happens?
There could be, you know, I guess is it your environment? Is there something that's disturbing you at that time of night? You know, sometimes medications or food or alcohol that you've ingested immediately prior to bed can have an impact on your sleep in the early hours of the morning. Is there a medical condition that, you know, someone may be suffering that's causing them to wake at that time of night? Bathroom breaks, that sort of thing.
Yeah, normal.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask, just going back a step, you spoke about long-term effects of long sleeping as opposed to short sleeping. So you're saying like there isn't a benefit of like just oversleeping? Is there what happens if you sleep too long, basically, is what I'm trying to get at. Like if you oversleep to 10 a.m., for example.
Yep. So sometimes that, I mean, I guess that can then impact on your circadian rhythm. So if you're sleeping later in the morning, you're not getting exposed to that light in the morning. So then you're not, it's not helping with your melatonin, breaking up the melatonin. And then obviously in the evening, you need higher levels of melatonin to fall asleep. And so, yeah, it can affect your circadian rhythm. So you actually might end up being, you know, almost opposite or uncoupled with with the light and dark cycle so that you're, you know, sleeping when it's light and up when it's dark. Yeah.
It's amazing how that happens. It sort of coincides with the Olympics being on or something like that, which is on the other side of the world, or a FIBA tournament being on and all of a sudden the games are at 1 and 3 in the morning and you make that adjustment to either stay up for those or set an alarm to go and watch those, and it messes my whole week. Like I know I can speak for myself in particular on this. I'm fairly consistent with what time I go to bed. I'm in that 9:30-ish range. But if I have 1, 11 o'clock night, it screws up my whole week in that space. So the need for consistent sleep, I suppose, is one of the things that you probably can't always predict though. Because if you are a parent with kids and it's like, hey, you know, we've got the school rehearsal that's on tonight and or we've got the 9:40 game on the Friday night and that can just throw everything out. It must be so difficult to get consistency for a lot of people in that world.
Yeah, definitely.
And I don't really have a solution for them, like unless you do. Like it's, I think it's just part of life, unfortunately, that's kind of going to be all over the place.
Yep, and definitely that's a, you know, getting to bed consistently at the same time and waking up consistently. That's a good practice to get into for good sleep hygiene, but you do need to be flexible with that. So, you know, if those sort of times are out by an hour, that's okay, your body can cope.
Yep. No, that makes a lot of sense.
And the same thing with weekend sleep, you know, it's okay to have an extra hour or, you know, hour and a half on your weekend. You just don't want to make that too long because then it might throw out your circadian rhythm for the next week. Yeah, yep. You might feel that Monday fatigue because you've slept too much
Cool.
Is paying back like your sleep debt important? Like if you've missed hours on the sleep through the week and you make it up over different sleep, does that have a positive impact or is that just, you know, just focus on consistency?
I think the best thing is focusing on consistency because if you've got, you know, only sleeping 4 or 5 hours across a whole week, you can't actually make up that debt on the weekend.
Okay.
It's really difficult. And then again, you have that flow-on effect on the Monday. You might actually feel more fatigued because you've slept, you know, more on the weekend and then you've got to get up for Monday morning, that sort of thing. So it is tricky.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You've mentioned a couple of times circadian rhythm. Mm-hmm. Can you just talk to us about what that is, where it sort of sits within the whole sleep world?
So your circadian rhythm is kind of your body's internal clock, which tells you when to fall asleep, when to wake up. Yep. And it's usually influenced by, you know, daylight and dark hours. So, yep. So the light and the dark, that's what kind of, you know, helps you to get into the same rhythm with the light schedule. Yep.
Yep.
So that's your 20, like your own internal clock. And everyone's is slightly different. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm curious now because you got my mind sort of going. Are you better off being tied to the circadian rhythm, or are you better off being tied to, say, an alarm in that space? Like, are you better off sort of sleeping until you don't need to sleep anymore, or should you live your life by an alarm, I suppose?
The difficult thing is they've done studies where they've put patients in, like, an environment where there's no light and dark cues.
Yep.
And they've just monitored what's happened with their patterns. And so what will happen is that people who are on free-running circadian rhythms, they tend to have a 25-hour sort of cycle rather than 24 for the daylight. Wow. So I guess the thing is, if you, you know, let your body do its own natural thing, you're probably going to have a misalignment with, you know, your work, school, or your social life and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So does daylight savings impact on that?
Yeah, definitely. So definitely going from spring, in spring when we go forward.
Yep.
And so we're lighter in the evening. That definitely, parents say that definitely has an impact on getting their children to sleep, you know, in the early hours of the evening so that they can get their 9 or 11 hours sleep that they need, but they're trying to get their kids to sleep when it's still light outside.
Yep.
So it's definitely a challenge.
I can appreciate that. As someone that tried to stay up as late as they could when I was a kid, like I remember what that was like.
Yeah.
But it's still light outside. Yep, it's exactly. Like, I don't care. Like, you're going to bed
you're
now.
You're going to bed now.
Like, this is how this works. But I want to stay and watch the Sunday night movie. It's like, I've missed nothing. Like, as it turns out, like, they're fairly trash movies as I recall back from them. Like, you might get the occasional Indiana Jones or something like that. Are there, like, you mentioned before napping, and you spoke more about the children. Is napping recommended? Is it just a look, if you need it, have it type thing?
Yeah, so definitely napping can boost your alertness if you're tired during the day. I think what the issue is that if you're constantly needing napping, you need to address what's the root cause of that. So are you not getting enough sleep overnight? If you do need to nap, keep it short, so 20 to 30 minutes, because people who nap longer than that actually wake up feeling groggier than when they, you know, before they went to have the nap. Yep. And that's really just to stop you from getting into your really deep sleep.
Yep. I absolutely reflected on that. Like, there's no question. Like, I know if we had like a 9:40 game on the Friday night and I got home from work, I'd try and grab a sleep. And I tried for a nap, but so many times it ended up being asleep. And then I'm like sort of dragging myself out of bed to go and coach this game and my alertness is down. Like, I feel sort of cranky. Because I feel like I've been woken out of a sleep rather than just, I closed my eyes for a little bit, you know, nap type thing. So that makes a lot of sense, actually. So 20 to 30 minutes is about the window.
Yep.
It's actually a really good point. Like, I've had the same where I used to work, obviously, split shift with coaching. So a lot of our association coaches do that early morning, late at night. So during the day, I'd have a bit of a break and I would take a sleep, but I would wake up worse than when I went, because it wouldn't be 30 minutes. It never is.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
And it's that, you know, those old ads on the for the TAC, you know, where they take a power nap?
Yep.
That's, again, why they recommended only doing that 15 minutes, really, so that you don't get into that deep sleep and actually feel worse.
You're on the side of the road for 3 days for sleeping.
I could see that happening. Like, it's quite easily. It's what's the best environment to get good sleep in? So if we were talking about, say, like room set up, outside stimulus and all that sort of stuff, what is the perfect environment to actually get some sleep?
Yep. So keeping it cool, dark and quiet are the main sort of three aspects that you work on. So optimal sleeping sort of temperatures or body temperature is 18 to sort of 20 degrees.
Yep.
So keeping yourself cool, keeping your room cool. Keeping it dark, block out blinds or curtains if you can use it, and then quiet as well, so you don't have that noise disturbing your sleep. And even if that means, you know, getting used to sleeping with earplugs in, if that's what's going to you know, block out all that external noise.
So when you say cool, as in like that 18 degrees, like, so if you had, say, an air conditioner going, what's the trade-off, I suppose, there? Like, are you better off using the air conditioner to get it cool, or are you better off not having the noise of the air conditioner? Like, is there, does one sort of matter more than the other?
Don't think so. Yep. No, I think it's just whatever's comfortable. You're comfortable with, yeah. And sometimes, you know, you might be able to use white noise as well. Yep. So that air conditioner might actually help serve that purpose as well. So blocking out other noises that you can hear, because you can just hear that constant sort of white noise of the motor of the air conditioner.
Yeah, cool. Because that is one thing, like, because we are starting to get into the summer months now. So obviously longer days from a light perspective, and not necessarily cooler houses because of it. So trying to get, like, we've all sweated through those nights where the air conditioner's broken or the fan's broken or you didn't have it, like, for those of us old enough to remember what that felt like. Like, they were uncomfortable nights. Mm. And, you know, there was no way knowing you were waking up at 7 a.m. Like, you'd always wake up at 4 a.m. because you just couldn't get comfortable. Mm-hmm. And the flow-on effect that had on everyone's mood, there was no huge shock. Like, everyone was just crankier, it felt like, in those summer months. And, like, it's interesting, the temperature makes such a massive difference. Like, I think, like, when it's cold, I always sleep better.
Mm.
And I don't know what it is, but it's just one of those things. But I'm also someone that falls asleep with the TV on. And now you've got me questioning, should the TV necessarily be on overnight in that sort of space?
I used to.
Yeah.
And I haven't for like 6-7 months, maybe because Orlando arrived, so we had to get rid of it. But I noticed the difference in my sleep just by removing it. By not having that, because sometimes I would just wake up and I would watch a bit of the TV, and obviously the blue light, I think the blue light would do something to my brain, and then it would take me a little bit to go back to sleep again, and I didn't really notice until I took it away.
Really?
Yeah, that was just my personal opinion on it. Like, I noticed a significant difference in my sleep, and even using the mask as well, where it just blacks out everything.
Oh, so you're like full immersion.
Oh, I'm in. Like, I'm down the rabbit hole.
You are like valuing sleep like there is no tomorrow at this point.
If I get 1 hour, I'm going to make that count. I'm going to make it count.
Exactly, the quality.
Yeah, 100%.
It makes sense. So obviously TV, no good, but white noise might be the good replacement in that space because you're not getting the light.
You're not getting the light,
What about red light? Red light in the room. Does that have an impact?
So definitely I think you're less likely to be aroused by the red light. So that's better than, like, you know, white light or really, you know, bright lights.
Yep.
I think that's why they use the, you know, red lights in the submarines as well to help with that sort of thing.
I hadn't actually thought of that. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
But red light, is definitely not as and warm light, so not the harsh bright lights.
That's true, and you've got me on now a different tangent altogether. So digital devices. So when you're talking about blue light, is it the content on the digital device that is causing people to stay awake, or is it the light coming from the digital? Probably both, to be fair. Yep, definitely
it is both. So the light can obviously interfere with your production of melatonin because what happens is the light is what breaks up the melatonin and makes you feel more alert. So if you're exposing yourself to light later in the evening when your body is supposed to be winding down, you know, you're not going to feel as sleepy because you're interfering with your melatonin production there.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
And then psychologically, you're stimulating yourself as well, so your body's more alert. Potentially, you know, you've got your higher stress hormones because you're engaging psychologically with what's happening. So then again, that can also delay your sleep onset because you're too amped up to fall asleep yet.
Yeah, and it doesn't take much. It's, you know, that might be one email comes through from work when you're checking or something like that. It's the wrong kind of email, which tend to be the ones that get sent from sort of 10:30 p.m. onwards that you naively go and open, and it's like, great, now I'm up for 3 hours thinking about that. It doesn't take much. And in particular, the social media one's the killer, I think, at the moment, with the ability to just scroll on and see the next thing. If you're not engaged by something in about 4 seconds, you probably tend to swipe on and look at the next thing. That has to impact so heavily on adults because because I think we forget about this at times. Adults didn't grow up with mobile phones. So they're kind of learning this at the same time as their kids are learning how to deal with mobile phones and social media and everything that goes with it. And I'm actually a big fan of the social media ban coming in for like 15-year-olds, I think it's 16-year-olds, whenever it is, just to get them out of that just to give them some quiet space, I suppose, in their head, and trying to get to that point is so difficult.
And get bored and think about something else, right?
Yeah, use your imagination.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, start thinking about what else could be done. Like, could I do this? Those sorts of things. So I think the content in particular is going to be what sort of sparks that mental stimulation, as you spoke about. Mm. Is there a way to wind down if you've been sort of aroused by that, for lack of a better term?
Yep. So I think that's important that you try to stop using your digital devices 30 minutes to an hour before bedtime.
Yep.
Wind down, and even TV, just wind down reading a book,
So that's TV as well when you talk about devices,
yeah.
30 minutes to an hour before.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Switch off your TV, read a book, even though that's not you're still engaged with your book.
Yeah.
It's the light impact is taken away from that. Yep.
Yeah. So I guess for coaches, right, let's say like they're coaching at a 9:40 game. They jump in the car, they go home. You just leave the phone, wouldn't you?
Don't touch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. The last thing I need to see after a game is my phone.
Don't want to read the comments.
No, pretty happy not to see those ones, as it turns out. But that is interesting because, I mean, does that count when you're driving? Is it difficult to sort of wind down after a drive or something like that as well? Does that sort of come into the same category?
Yeah, I think, you need a bit of wind down time, get your, manage your stress levels, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think, you do need a little bit of wind down time after doing an activity like driving, that sort of thing.
Yep. Yep.
And so, alcohol, no. Try not to avoid alcohol in your wind down time as well.
This was my next question. Yep. So there is no good alcohol.
No, so alcohol may make you feel sleepy and, help you relax to go to sleep. But what happens is in the middle of the night it can have quite negative effects on your sleep in the early hours of the morning. So it make you feel restless, more arousable, that sort of thing. Yep. So alcohol should definitely be limited in the hours before bed.
Yep. So like a 6 p.m. type thing and nothing after that would be a roundabout, give or take. Yeah, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yep.
So the other... the other big one, obviously, caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
So where does Nick's smiling like a Cheshire
cat? As soon as you started talking about alcohol, I'm like, please don't bring up caffeine. Yeah. I've already got it from Alex the other way.
With the cured meats?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. What impact does caffeine have on sleep?
Yep. And I'm like you, Nick. I drink caffeine late in the evening as well when I know I really shouldn't. But caffeine can delay your sleep onset. So it can make it harder to fall asleep.
Yep.
And then it can also have effect on reducing your deep sleep, which is when your body is going through all its restoration and repair. So it can affect that sort of really that type of sleep. And caffeine can stay in your system for about 10 hours. So, so it is in your system. So early morning consumption is okay. It's not going to affect your sleep as much. But then when you're considering drinking coffee in the afternoon and into the evening, potentially that can, affect your sleep.
Yeah.
And then also considering sort of those hidden sources of caffeine that you may not necessarily think of, like chocolate, energy drinks, that sort of thing. Caffeine's in a lot of foods, not just sort of coffee and energy drinks that we think of.
Yep.
If you can limit it, that's good. And everyone's, got different sensitivity to caffeine as well. So there is a bit of an individual kind of aspect to that as well.
Yep.
And I think sometimes you think to yourself, no, I can drink caffeine in the evening and it doesn't appear to affect my sleep. But Nick touched on it before. I think you don't know how bad your sleep is until you actually get some good sleep. So when you were talking about when you finally decided to turn off the TV, you actually realised how much better your sleep is. Yep. So I think caffeine might be one of those ones as well that, when you start to kind of think about it and reduce and limit its intake before bed, you may actually find that you get further improvements in your sleep when you may not have necessarily appreciated that it was affecting your sleep.
And I'm one where my tolerance of caffeine is not great. I don't drink coffee. I haven't had an energy drink for 20-ish years that I can think of since I've changed jobs. But I was out the other night and I had a Coke with dinner And I reckon I was up until about 1:30, 2 o'clock because I'd never have it. So, and then I had one and all of a sudden I was pinging off the walls. Yep. It felt like my mind was just going at a million miles an hour. So it is one of those things, I suppose, you can build up a tolerance, but it's probably best not to in a lot of ways in that space because it's just one more thing that can impact in space. And Alex spoke to it with the nutrition thing. She was talking about 3 hours before bed is when you want to have your last meal. Is that accurate from your experience as well?
Yeah, definitely. Digestion and that can make it uncomfortable to fall asleep.
Yep.
Heavy meals can impact your sleep as well.
Okay. Yep. So are there good foods to have? I'm hesitant to go good foods and bad foods, and Nick is feverishly rocking back and forth in his chair over there saying,
I've already made my mistake on one of these pods. I'm not doing it again.
But is there anything that will kind of help us sleep better or things we should avoid?
Really just more your alcohol and your caffeine and nicotine, sort of those sort of stimulating, substances, I guess, rather than necessarily avoiding, certain foods. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, it's more the time. Yep.
So the old warm milk with honey to get you to sleep is just – it's probably just a placebo or just something you're into.
I think that's the habit of doing it. So, that kind of, is a positive association with sleep because you're making yourself some milk and some honey and, your body's sort of recognizing, okay, this is going to help me sleep. Yep. It's a positive sort of association with sleep. So I think that is, going to be the biggest player in that sort of space.
It's amazing how our bodies recognize habits and how those habits impact our sleep. So if you're consistent with your sleep hours, consistent with your process leading up to those sleep hours, your body will go, oh, okay, cool. This is when I need to sleep. This is where I'll get my REM sleep. This is where I'll get blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I think it's – getting good sleep is a habit. It's a habit that you've got to develop yourself. And some people, can do whatever and they don't seem to impact their sleep, and other people need to really kind of, be very strict on their habits to get a good night's sleep. So it's individual differences, yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny because, I think of me, anytime I go on a plane, I am wide awake the entire time. I cannot sleep on a plane to save my life. The second wheels go up, Zoe is out cold. My wife, she's just gone. And it's like, oh, good, I'll do this 14 hours by myself then, shall I, as I'm trying to, amuse myself as nothing's going on. And it is such a unique space. And I guess the mental one is the one that really, because I'm thinking about a lot of coaches that might have the late night game, not get home until late as well. And they're going over, should I have called that timeout? Should I have made that sub? What should I have done differently in that space? And it just, the mental side of things just gets them going.
Yep.
And is there a good way to sort of decompress? Is it just get it out more than anything else and not try and hold on to it? Is that something that can work?
I think that'll depend on the individual themselves, whether what works for them. Trying to manage that stress, not to, keep mulling over it. I think that's, really important to help you get a good night's sleep to try and get rid of that stress,
That's where the coach's call comes into it. Well, we spoke about absolutely. It a few months ago, right? We spoke about George actually, how he would call me and just detox for 35 minutes. I wouldn't even say anything. He would just be talk, and then when it's out, he goes, "All right, mate, I'll see you next week," and then he would just hang up. That's it.
That's I refuse to listen to him.
Yeah, exactly. Call your brother.
You've got to have boundaries.
That's right.
Yeah. But that is a big part of it. I always felt better getting it out, and I know. I'm going back a ways now, but I know when I had the late night game, there was a pizza place that was kind of near the stadium where it's okay, as coaches, we'd all go to that pizza place afterwards, we'd debrief on the game and all those sorts of things. And that was really healthy, from the ability to get all the information out. Eating a large margarita at 11:30 p.m., not so much as it turns out. So you've got to try and weigh up your pros and your cons for both of your processes and try and get them to align where you can. But it is such a difficult part, and I am sympathetic to coaches, and I say this somewhat flippantly in that, Nick, you and I don't work real jobs. We work in sport. Mm. It's a passion side of things for sure, but we do have that ability to decompartmentalize, I suppose, for lack of a better term, basketball and life. But for a lot of people and a lot of coaches out there, coaching is the hobby in that space, or it's, they have their job, but basketball is kind of the release, and they've got to try and look after their entire well-being as another aside to that. So seeing what coaches go through and knowing what coaches go through, and it's not unusual to wake up on a Saturday morning and you've got a couple of text messages from coaches that are post midnight where they're clearly still up and trying to think about things. That's not uncommon, I don't think. So trying to get consistency, I suppose, in sleep is the biggest thing. Knowing there's going to be the outlier, as you spoke about before, Beck, like there's going to be a night where it doesn't work for whatever reason, or you might have that early morning meeting, in which case it goes the other way potentially. But trying to find some consistency matters.
Big Tom, I was actually going to ask you a question. Hopefully you can answer it, but just thinking about consistency and our Friday night games, the 9:40, is there a benefit in getting 6 out of 7 nights right, but you can't get that one night right? Or is it like, nope, you've got to, like, being consistent on 7 nights is way more beneficial?
Oh, definitely, you know, obviously the more nights you can kind of stick to that routine is better. But I think, you know, we live in the real world, you know. Yep. Our lives, you know, are scheduled at all hours of the day and the evening. So I think, you know, if 6 nights of the week you can, you know, maintain that kind of consistent schedule, and the one night there's an outlier, okay, you might be a bit tired the next day, but, you know, if you get back into that routine again, you'll hopefully, get back into that routine, and so then you don't have that sleep debt to make up. Yeah. Yep.
Are there any, like, sleep myths that you've heard that you'd love to sit here and just debunk on us straight away, where it's just like,
please, yeah, don't be blue light blocking glasses. I have preached though. Is that what this is about?
No,
is,
no,
oh, okay.
Not aimed in that direction, okay. But if we end up there, I'll laugh at it.
So I guess, you know, that snoring is harmless. You know, yep. I think, you know, everyone goes, oh, they're just super tired, they're just snoring a little bit. I think, you know, if your bed partner says that you snore regularly, or you notice that your children snore regularly, I think that's important to get checked out. Yep. So get a referral from your GP to a sleep specialist, just to make sure that there's not some breathing issues going on overnight. So I think, you know, sometimes culturally snoring is felt that, oh, that means they're just in a really deep sleep. That's not always the case. And obviously we snore because, you know, we might be suffering for a little bit of hay fever or we have a cold, but it's more that, again, if snoring is, you know, happening, you know, 3 to 4 nights out of the week or all nights out of the week, I think it's important that that gets, you know, investigated.
Yep.
Just to make sure that there's nothing going on with the sleep. And then again, is that impacting on the sleep? So you may be going to bed for your 7 hours or 9 hours of sleep, but if you're snoring and stopping breathing overnight and waking up, obviously your sleep quality is very poor, even though technically you're getting your 9 hours.
Yep.
So definitely that's one of the myths that, you know, we kind of hear. The other one, which is sort of related to sleep, but, you know, that you swallow spiders in your sleep. I don't think there's any evidence that actually
I did hear that. Occurs. What was it? It was like 12 spiders a year or something.
Yeah. So I, you know, just did a bit of a Google search to work out what myths are out there, and that one popped up, you know, very high up on the list. Yep. So I don't think there's any evidence that that's actually what happens.
Yep.
That's disappointing.
Yeah.
All right, won't be able to scare Sarah around anymore.
Yeah.
Proudly sponsored by Mortine, this podcast. Yeah. But let's talk blue blocking glasses. Just to, any evidence on this? Is it a good thing?
So there are some studies out there that do show that it can, you know, reduce the amount of blue light that, you know, is getting through. But there is sort of some mixed studies on whether it actually impacts your, like, as in whether those blue light glasses actually help improve your quality of sleep. So the evidence is mixed on that.
Yep.
No,
is that because it's like we don't have enough data yet? Like, they're relatively new, aren't they? They haven't been around very long.
I don't think they have. I reckon I saw them about 5 or 6 years ago. It was probably the first time I really sort of took notice of it. But
And you don't know the quality of them, so it's really hard to study, wouldn't it? Because you can buy cheaper ones and stuff, but you don't know if they even work.
Yeah, but there are so many variables, I think, that come into that, like, what quality mattress do you have? Like, is there something else? Like, who knows? Like, it's the amount of times I've had a better night's sleep on the couch because I just happened to fall asleep because I was clearly ready to fall asleep rather than in bed. Like, I don't know that you can quantify it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like, it's, so continue wearing the Nick. Like, yeah, beautiful. You're golden.
Beautiful. I was worried it was going in the delicatessen meat department, but that's good. I've saved those ones.
Yes, keep using them if you want to. Yeah. But I think it's also the engagement with the content that you're watching as well. Are you, you know, getting engaged with it, and then that's what's causing you to, you know, not be able to fall asleep because you're psychologically not ready to fall asleep now because you're too in hyped up and engaged.
That's interesting, actually, because I do have those moments at night where I just flick on something that I've watched many, many times, like Seinfeld or something, and it's just running in the background because I don't have to concentrate to it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never...
Well, it speaks to the TV side of things. Like, like we do watch TV at night, but we cycle through probably the same five or six shows, and it's all stuff that we don't have to pay attention to. Like, it's just on, but I'm not engaged in what's going on until it's like the Goodbye Toby episode from The Office, and then I'm like right into that thing, and I can't stop watching it. And you know, it's a good little era of The Office, as it turns out. Is there anything we haven't spoken about today that you think would be relevant for people to hear about sleep in general?
Yeah, mainly just reiterating that it's really important facet of, you know, your health. Sleep is linked to so many different areas of your life. It can impact your mood and cognition. You know, having a bad night's sleep, you're irritable. You know, long-term effects can have, you know, serious sort of cardiovascular and metabolic consequences further down in your life if you don't treat sort of poor quality sleep. So I think it's really important aspect of your life that maybe kind of, you know, people don't always consider. You know, if there's not enough hours in the day, if you are really busy, the sleep is the first thing that you kind of that you cut down on to get rid of.
It's an easy sacrifice.
Yeah, it feels sacrifice, like a time. That's what I was looking for. Yeah.
I'm curious, one just popped into my head as you were talking about it then. We have a lot of coaches that'll stay up late at night and do things like cut film. And like Nick, obviously you did it quite a bit. Are you better off staying up at night, or are you better off getting up early the next morning to do it? Like, is there and is it person dependent, I guess?
I think it's a bit of person dependent because, you know, there's different types of people. You know, there's the larks who are kind of more morning type people, and then the owls who are kind of like your people that can stay up later and do things later in the evening. So I think it depends on, you know, what type of person are you? Are you a morning type or more of an evening type?
No, that makes a lot of sense, because I've always valued sleep over getting it done. Like, I'd rather not get it done and get up early the next morning and do it while I'm fresh, because I have this fear of I'm going to make a mistake while I'm tired, and that's not ideal because then I'm just going to spend more energy fixing the mistake.
So I'm the other way. Yeah. I'm similar to Trig, where it's if I don't do it, I can't sleep because I know it's sitting there. So if I don't do it, I can't go to sleep. So I just go and do it.
That makes a lot of sense. And that's where, you know, person dependent and your personality will probably come into it a little bit too, I guess, in that sort of space. But I think that's it from my end. Beck, thank you very much for jumping into this. I really appreciate your time. Like, it's not easy to find time to talk about these sorts of things. So we definitely appreciate you coming in, and certainly the coaches do as well. This is our last one that we've recorded for Coach Wellbeing Month, and hopefully it makes a difference to people out there. And I think the message you're giving there is just treat your sleep seriously. Like, it's not just a flippant thing that it's like, oh, time to go to bed now. Treat it seriously. The hygiene around it, the habits around it, I think is so important. So thank you very much for jumping in on this today.
Pleasure. You're welcome.
Huge thanks again to Beck Mihai for jumping into the podcast and discussing sleep with us. It's such an area that we probably haven't delved quite enough into, and we all know that the constraints we all have around work, school, and just ferrying kids to and from various things heavily impacts on sleep and the hygiene around what it can potentially look like and habits that we form within that sleep space. So fantastic to have Beck come in and speak about that, and just some things that what we can do better in that space. And, you know, it won't always be perfect. You might get, you know, a bad night's sleep somewhere, but how can you get two or three, you know, good night's sleep after that to make up for it where they possibly can? So something to consider as you go into what your habits might look like. As I said, that does wrap us up for all the Coach Wellbeing content specifically. There will be another podcast where we wrap it all up and give everyone a little bit of an idea and some tasks to look at for November, just to try and live a little bit of a healthier lifestyle if possible in that space. So tune in for that one again shortly, and we'll catch everyone next time on the pod.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.